There was a nun in our community at the time who was suffering from a very serious and agonizing ailment. Intestinal obstructions had created open sores in her stomach. She couldn't keep any food down. Her health rapidly deteriorated, and soon she was dead. I noticed that the other sisters were terrified of this disease, but I found myself envying the nun's incredible patience. I begged God to send me whatever illness he chose, as long as it would instill that kind of patience in me. I don't think I was afraid of being sick. I was so hungry for heavenly blessings that I was willing to obtain them by any means necessary. It surprises me to recall this. Although I had not yet fallen as deeply in love with God as I have since I embarked on a life of prayer, there was enough light for me to see that temporary things are trivial and pass away. Somehow I knew that the blessings that come from letting these things go last forever. His Majesty was listening to me. Less than 2 years later, I became seriously ill. It was not the same disease that had killed the nun, but I believe it was just as painful and difficult to bear. I will now tell you about something that happened during the 3 year period I was suffering from this illness. As I said, I stayed with my sister while I was waiting for my treatment to begin. When the time came, my father, my sister, my friend Juana, with the utmost care and concern for my comfort, took me away. Juana was that nun who had accompanied me when I first left the convent and stayed by my side because she loved me so much. It was during this time that the spirit of evil began to really agitate my soul. But, as you will see, God turned the whole thing into a great blessing. With my delicate constitution, I suffered terribly. I barely survived the radical treatment. At the end of the 2 months, the cure had almost killed me. That pain in my heart, which was the reason I had gone there in the first place, was much worse. Sometimes it felt as if sharp teeth were biting into me. My pain was so intense that the people taking care of me were afraid that I was going to lose my mind. My energy plummeted. I took only liquid because I was nauseated all the time and couldn't bear to eat solid food. I ran a constant fever. They had been giving me purgatives every day for almost a month, and I was wasting away. I was so constricted that my nerves began to shrink, causing me such excruciating pain that I could not sleep day or night. I was utterly miserable. It became apparent to my father that the healer was doing me no good, and he took me away. We went back to the regular doctors, but they had given up on me. They concluded that in addition to all of my other ailments, I was suffering from tuberculosis and there was nothing they could do for me. This diagnosis did not bother me nearly as much as did the constant pain that racked me from head to foot. The doctors themselves admitted that nerve pain is unbearable. And since my nerves had collapsed, I would indeed have been incapable of enduring the suffering if not for the realization that my condition was of my own making. I battled all of these problems at the same time for more than 3 months. It was excruciating. In retrospect, it seems impossible that I survived. I am equally amazed and also grateful that His Majesty gave me the blessing of great patience. It is clear that this gift came directly from God. Reading the story of Job in the Morals of St. Gregory bolstered my patience tremendously. I even slept with them. The Lord used this text to prepare me for the suffering I had to undergo. It also helped that I had begun to cultivate contemplative practice because this enabled me to sit with things as they are. All my conversations were with God. I continually carried the words of Job in my mind. Since we have received good things at the hand of the Lord, shall we not suffer evil things? I repeated this frequently, and it gave me strength. It was time for the August Feast of Our Lady. I had been in agony since April, but the last 3 months had been the worst. I had always been inclined to go to confession often, but now I was confessing at every opportunity. They all thought that this was because I was afraid of dying, so my father, thinking he was protecting me from mental distress, decided to forbid me from going anymore. Oh, too much earthly love. My father was a good Catholic and a very wise man, So it was not a matter of ignorance that prevented him from seeing what good the practice of penance had been doing me. Nevertheless, despite his intention, his stance could have done me great harm. That night I had a seizure that left me unconscious for almost 4 days. They administered the sacrament of unction, and from hour to hour and moment to moment, they expected me to die. Over and over, they recited the creed to me as if I could understand. At one point, they seemed to conclude that I was dead, because I actually found wax on my eyelids when I regained consciousness. My father was terribly distressed about having prevented me from going to confession. Many tears were shed for me, and many prayers were said to God on my behalf. Blessed be the one who heard them. They dug a grave for me back at the incarnation and were waiting a day and a half for my body. In another monastery of our order, far away, they had already performed the last rites for me. But it pleased the Lord for me to return to consciousness. I immediately wanted to go to confession. When I received communion, I couldn't stop crying. It was not only that. I was moved and distressed by the possibility that I had in any way offended God. That remorse in itself would have been enough to save my soul. No. What upset me most was the realization that the men who had attempted to guide me had misled me and tried to convince me that my sins were minor, when in fact they had been grave. I now saw clearly that I had used this guidance as an excuse for inexcusable acts. My suffering was so unbearable I could hardly form thoughts. Still, I think I managed to offer a complete confession of all the ways I had forsaken my God. There is a certain blessing, among so many others, that His Majesty has given me. Ever since I first began to speak with Him, I have never kept back anything. If I thought I might have committed any error, even a minor one, I confessed it. But I do believe that if I had died back then without having had access to proper confession, my salvation would have been questionable. This is partly because my spiritual guides were only half-learned men, and also because I myself was such a mess. There were many other reasons as well. When I come to this point in my story, I find myself so stunned to remember how my beloved brought me back to life that I am trembling inside. It seems to me that it would be a good thing, my soul, for you to take a look at the danger from which your Lord delivered you. That way, if love is not enough to keep you from offending Him, you will at least be motivated by awe. There were 1,000 times He might have let you die, and when you were in an even greater state of peril than you found yourself in that day. I do not believe I am exaggerating when I say 1,000, although the person who has ordered me to tell my life story has repeatedly urged me to be moderate when I recount my sins. But I have already made my transgressions sound far too innocent. For love of God, I beg this man not to excuse a single one of my faults, because they only serve to reveal the magnificence of God and His willingness to suffer for our souls. May He be blessed forever, and may His Majesty be pleased to know that I would swallow myself whole before I would ever stop loving Him. Chapter 6. Saint Joseph's Cure. I emerged from that 4-day fit in a state of such unbearable torment that only the Lord can know the truth of what I went through. I had bitten my tongue to pieces. Not a morsel of food had passed my lips in so long that I was too weak to swallow, and I choked when I tried to take even a sip of water. It felt like all my limbs were out of joint and my mind was in a total fog. Not only that, but the suffering I had endured during those 4 days left me all twisted up like a pile of knotted ropes. I had no more ability to move my hand or foot than a dead person has, unless someone else moved it for me. Actually, I think I was able to move one finger on my right hand. I was in such a pitiful state that I could not bear for anyone to see me like that. I felt so bruised that my friends and family had to carry me around on a sheet. One person would take up one corner and another person would take up the other. This went on until Easter. Since I couldn't bear to be touched, the only time I had any relief was when I was left alone for a little while. After resting in solitude, I began to think that I was getting well. I was very relieved whenever my pain let up, simply because I was beginning to worry that my patience was failing me. I still suffered from terrible bouts of fever and chills and unrelenting nausea. I was desperate to return to the incarnation, so my family finally relented and took me there. The nuns, who had been expecting to receive a dead body, were pleased to be welcoming a living woman instead. But I was in such bad shape that I looked worse than a dead person. I was nothing but skin and bones by this time, and I cannot even begin to describe how weak I was. It took 8 months for me to recover from this paralysis and the illness that accompanied it. Although I continued to improve, the paralysis lingered for almost 3 years. When I began to get around by crawling on my hands and knees, I praised God. I accepted all this and eventually came to bear my condition with genuine joy. After all, it was a vast improvement over what I went through at first. I had surrendered to the will of God, even if He were to leave me like that forever. I think my greatest wish was that I could get better just so that I could practice solitary prayer again as I had been taught. It was impossible to be alone in the convent infirmary. I was unwavering in my commitment to confession. I spoke about God constantly and in such a way that everyone I talked to was uplifted and amazed by the patience the Lord had given me. It was obvious that this was a gift from the Beloved's hand, because without it, I could not possibly have endured such terrible suffering with such pure contentment. In prayer, God granted me the grace of His mercy. This was a wonderful blessing because it helped me to realize what it is to love Him. I began to feel the holy virtues flowing back into me, although as it turned out, not strongly enough to hold me up in righteousness. I made it my practice to avoid speaking badly of anyone, ever. Whenever I was tempted, I would simply remind myself not to say anything about someone else that I would not want someone to say about me. I was uncompromising in my commitment to this value. Of course, I was not perfect, and certain difficult situations came up that strained my resolve to the breaking point. Still, this was my customary way of behaving, and those who spent time with me were so struck by it that they made it their practice to. People realized that when they were with me, they could turn their backs and be perfectly safe. This was true not only for the women I lived with at the incarnation, but also for my friends, my relatives, and my students. But I have set a very bad example in other areas, and I'm going to have to be accountable to God for those. Please forgive me, Your Majesty, for all the trouble I have caused. Know that my negative actions do not in any way reflect my positive intentions. My longing for solitude continued. I still loved to read good books. The only conversation I found worthwhile was conversation about God. Whenever I encountered anyone who wanted to talk about God with me, it gave me more delight and sheer recreation than any worldly pleasures, which are actually empty, ever could. I took communion and made confession as often as possible. I remember that sometimes I avoided prayer because I was afraid of facing my disloyalty to God and the terrible pain this would cause me. The very thought that I might have done anything to offend my beloved was a severe punishment in itself. This anxiety intensified to such a degree that I do not know what to compare it to. It was not a matter of fear, because I was just as likely to suffer from this kind of distress when I considered the blessings the Lord had given me in prayer as when I reflected on the mistakes I had made. If I thought about all He had done for me, I couldn't help but notice how little I had offered in return. I couldn't bear to face this, and I would cry over my many faults. But my tears only made me angry with myself. Had my remorse stopped me from falling whenever an opportunity presented itself? Were all my resolutions and effort doing me any good? This weeping of mine struck me as fraudulent. All it did was highlight my imperfection, because tears of repentance are a gift from God, and I was wasting them. I always tried to confess my transgressions as soon as I committed them, and I did everything I could to return to a state of grace. But the problem was that I did not know how to cut off my sinful inclinations at their root. Nor were my confessors much help in the matter. If they had told me that these long religious conversations of mine were thinly veiled indulgences, I would have stopped them immediately. I would never have consciously risked missing the mark for even a single day. In prayer, I would be overcome with awe of God. A sign that I was motivated more by love than by fear was that I never thought about retribution. My anxiety was always enfolded by love.